So show of hands, how many of you would keep your sight? Show of hands, okay? Sound? Smell? How many of you would just keep smell? Like that's the only, just smelling the world. Taste? Yeah, okay. Touch? Ah, very good. So this question intrigues me because as I am aging, I'm losing some of my senses, two in particular. So I choose a restaurant now not based on the food or ambiance or buzz. I base it on decibel level. So for our Christmas lunch, we went to Rosewood, which is just down the street. We walked in. There's a round table, which was already awesome. There was a Lazy Susan on it, which was beautiful. But they had sound panels all over the restaurant, and we could talk and hear each other. To which I declared, this is my favorite restaurant. We hadn't even ordered. I didn't taste any of the food yet. Immediately my favorite restaurant. I am also, as I'm aging, losing my vision. So my current kryptonite is a small font combined with lack of light. So I got back from my sabbatical. Two of my friends had just opened a bar, Last Straw. So they called me and they're like, hey, it's a soft opening. Why don't you come? So I get there. If you look at the picture, looks like there's a lot of light. Appears to be. I get there, it's colorful, it's beautiful, and just dark. So Will and Cody, they hug me, they give me a menu. They're like, hey man, anything you want to eat, anything you want to drink, look through, read the entire menu. Read all of the drinks, read all of the snacks, anything you would like, just read it on the house. I look at the menu. Have you ever looked through a camera and just blurred the focus? I can't read a thing. I'm just looking at it. I was like, oh yeah, this looks great. All these drinks. Oh, I'm reading all of them right now. To which I go, what is your favorite drink? And they go, oh man, you're the best. And in my mind, I was like, no, I'm the blind, right? So you may, if you see me at a bar, you'll recognize me. I now go to bars with a magnifying glass and a headlamp. So the question I've been asking as my vision is declining is what if it were a reminder for me to expand or deepen my spiritual vision? What's the capacity that I can see with love in this world, of myself, of others? Anthony DeMello says it like this: what we need is not just action that will bring about change, but sight that will bring about love. And the question I want to ask this morning as we begin a new year, as we enter this new space, what if God continued to expand our vision of love for ourselves, for others? What would that look like? And so the gospel text on the lectionary this morning is in Matthew chapter 2. As is our custom, we'll have it on the screen. Read it aloud to a friend and then we'll walk through. All right, Matthew 2. Anyone miss dodging a poll? In the time of King Herod, so King Herod has so much power, history is defined by his name. We'll come back to that in a little bit. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, so the first visitors were who? Wise men from the east. So the first visitors that recognized the divinity of Jesus were foreigners from the east. Or more specifically, fortune-telling Zoroastrian priests. So Zoroastrian religion is one of the oldest religions in the world. It was the dominant religion of Persia before Islam became its main religion. And so it's as if God, in the beginning of the story, was like, hey, you want to know how big these boundaries are of welcome? You know how expansive my welcome is? Think of the most different person you can think of, as far as you can get, and they're going to be the first ones to recognize Jesus' divinity. Isn't that incredible? And so the question I want to ask is, what would it look like for us to expand our borders and our boundaries of welcome? How reckless, how radical can our welcome be? And how do we live into that? And so I know this is like a nice idea, right? Everyone's like, oh, of course we want to welcome everyone. So maybe the question we can ask is, what is our own place and practice in welcoming? Like, what can we practice so that collectively, when people walk through the door, they go, oh, the sense of welcome here is very, it's expansive, it's reckless. Anthony DeMello says like this: we see people and things not as they are, but as we are. So maybe our practice could be this. Maybe in order to welcome people as they are, we need to begin by welcoming ourselves as we are. Does that make sense? And some of the questions I've been asking is, what parts of me have I not really looked at or that need welcoming? I kind of see it as a conversation partner. Like, what parts of me do I need to welcome to the conversation of who I am? And so sometimes as immigrants, you know, I was born in an immigrant family. You grow up and there's this part of you that's not welcomed in the world. So you go to this place where your parents are trying to set down roots. And then everywhere I go, there's my Chinese identity that's usually not welcome. But then what happens is you go back to where your parents are from and you find out you're not welcome there either. And it's just a question that I've been asking recently. And so I have a couple stories that relate to that. I was at Taco Deli recently. So I just dropped off Noah for school. Had a little rumble and my tumble. So I was like, I'm going to get myself some tacos and coffee. Hadn't had coffee yet. So I'm sitting there by myself, enjoying this morning, my first sip of coffee, eating my taco. There's an elderly couple sitting next to me that just kept staring at me. They're just like, I could feel the energy of their eyes, and I'd be like. A couple minutes pass, and then she keeps looking at me. She's like, you look so familiar. I was like, oh, hi. She goes, I just watched this kung fu movie. And she goes, honey, what was it? Crouching Tiger. I go, Hidden Dragon. She goes, yes. Have you seen it? So what she's telling me is that she relates to me like a foreign film, that I don't belong. And so that's when every time someone asks me, hey, where are you from? I go, Austin. They go, no, where are you from? I was like, well, Detroit before that. No, where are you from? Chicago. Where are you from? Toronto. I was like, I've moved to a lot of places. I could keep going here. And when that's happening now, I'm like, oh, okay. There's this part of me that was never welcomed in the world, and I've actually never spent the time looking at it to welcome it in my life. I recently went to Hong Kong. It was my grandmother's 90th birthday, mom's 70th, and a cousin got married. So I was obligated to go. And so the story is when I go to Hong Kong, I'm too American. My Cantonese isn't good enough, and I get shamed that my kids can't speak Chinese. So that's usually the narrative. So I go there. My grandmother's the matriarch. She's the alpha. It's really interesting watching in her room. It's like watching pack mentality, and she just twitches, and everyone comes running. So everyone's kind of scared of her. The thing you do is you land, and then everyone has to go, like, pay your respects, or it's not good. So they're like, all right, off the plane, you need to go pay respects to the alpha. I was like, okay, fine. If it'll help my mother, I'll go. So we're sitting there. And we're at this round table at a dim sum place. All my aunts and uncles are there. I knew my hair was going to be a thing. I was like, should I cut it? It took me a long time to grow. I'm just not going to cut it, right? Don't worry about it. So I'm sitting there. My mother's sitting next to her. My mother's scared of her. And my grandmother leans over and goes, Gideon's hair is very long. Doesn't say anything. My mom starts like panicking in her brain. She's like, oh no, here it comes, right? Gideon's too American. His Cantonese isn't good. His kids don't speak Chinese. Oh! And then my grandmother leans over to her, whispers in my mother's ear, he looks like Jesus. Best case scenario, really. So I was thinking through this. We were at a staff meeting. Claudia had recently gone to Mexico, and she was talking about her love and her passion for rediscovering her roots in Mexico. And as she was saying that, I said out loud, just like, China's the hardest place for me to visit in the world. And as I said that, I was like, oh, okay. There's a part of me that I need to welcome to the table as a conversation partner. Anthony DeMello says it like this. Anytime you have a negative feeling towards anyone, you're living in an illusion. You're not seeing reality. Something inside you has to change. But what do we generally do when we have a negative feeling? He is to blame. She is to blame. She's got to change. He goes, no, the world's all right. The one has to change is us. And so Tony so beautifully painted the todos son bienvenidos, excuse my Canadian accent. And it is a sign of welcome. But I wonder if it also could be a spiritual practice for us, that whenever we see it, we're reminded of, okay, what parts of me still need to be welcomed And as we welcome the parts of us together collectively over time, maybe this place and this space will be a radically welcoming place. And that's my hope. All right, let's keep going. So it says, when King Herod heard this, so the man who's, he has so much power, history is defined by his name. And he hears of a newborn, a child, and he's frightened. And just imagine the picture. Like, I imagine, so a child doesn't know that they need to earn things yet. They're just born, right? And then the frenzy of the most powerful man of the region, right? And all of Jerusalem with him, calling together, he gets like the chief priests and like the bishops and the scribes, and he inquires of all of them where the Messiah was to be born. And I always find it interesting what powerful people are intimidated by. I always find it surprising. Like, did you hear the president of China, President Xi? So a meme came up, and they compared him to Winnie the Pooh. I have a picture. Is there a picture there? Okay. Which I don't even think is an insult. Like, Winnie the Pooh's amazing, right? So he hears of this, and he's so threatened. This is arguably at least top three most powerful people in the world. There's a meme, probably a middle schooler made it, comparing him to Winnie the Pooh. Winnie the Pooh is now 100% banned in all of China. Just like, no more Winnie the Pooh. Threatened by a cute yellow bear who just loves honey. So I was thinking, why is Herod intimidated by a baby? And I wonder if it's this. I wonder if the ego is intimidated by the self. The ego that's trying to earn, perform, act, strive, when they're confronted with an actual self, they don't know what to do. And I actually think that's what Philippians 2 means. So there's a verse in Philippians, and Paul talks about how that's supposed to be our pattern of humility. And he talks about how Jesus had equality with God and didn't consider that something to be grasped. Instead, made himself nothing, and because of that, he had access to the highest place. And I wonder if what it means is Jesus was secure in his divinity. He knew his access to divinity. So when he was born to add value, he needed nothing. He needed nothing to add value to who he already was. And because of that pattern, he had access to the highest place. Does that make sense? Anne Lamott says it like this. Could you say this about yourself right now? Like right now. That you have immense and intrinsic value right now at your current weight, income level, while waiting to hear if you got the job or didn't, sold your book or didn't. This idea, she says, that I had value, I had all the value I'd ever need was concealed from me my whole life. I want a refund, she says. In this world of suffering and grace, of brokenness and sky, of bad skin and buck teeth in one another, I cannot add to the value of myself. And I think children know this. They haven't been tricked enough yet that they need to add value. So I have a friend here at Vox. Her name is Luisa. Luisa and I became friends at the retreat. I was talking to her father, Nicholas, and she came along and started talking. I didn't even know she could talk. We had a 5-minute conversation, not of substance. I think I spent most of the 5 minutes trying to convince her my name was Lucas, which is her brother's name and her uncle's name. That's our whole conversation. And then we became friends, and she made me a video. Check it out.
Luisa, what did you just say about Gideon?
I love him. And the, my best friend. She's my best friend in the whole world.
Really? Is there anything you want to tell him?
Yeah, and I want to make a surprise for him.
You want to make a surprise for him? Okay, I'm going to go see him right now. Is there anything that you want me to tell him for
you? The surprise is this. Oh.
Luisa, is there anything you want me to tell him?
Yes.
What do you want to tell him?
I love you.
Okay, I'll tell him that. Okay, can you say bye?
Yeah. Bye, Gideon.
Isn't that amazing? I can't tell you how much joy that brings me. Like, I've watched that video so many times. I was a little embarrassed because it felt narcissistic. I was like, so this little child calls my name, and I'm like, oh, I'm so happy, right? But I realized that it had such a deep impact on me. Louisa needs nothing from me. She doesn't know who I am. She doesn't know what a pastor means. She's never seen me speak. She's always in the other room. She needs nothing. I'm so used to earning things. This is a real thought I had during the holiday. I should probably FaceTime Louisa. I don't want her to forget who I am. I need to invest in this relationship. Right? I had that actual thought. But like an adult, I neglected my relational commitments and didn't FaceTime her. And the next time I saw her, she was like, Gideon! It's amazing. And I think sometimes we have this posture with God. We're like, I probably should FaceTime with God sometime soon, right? Like, shouldn't neglect that. And he sees us. And he's like, Gideon, Nicholas, Meredith, Jeff. And we don't have to do anything. There's nothing you can do to add value. And I think this is the best anti-New Year's resolution pitch ever. Like this year, 2019, to make yourself more lovable, to make yourself more valuable, do nothing. Do less. This is what Cynthia Bourgeau says. At the center of our being is a point of pure nothingness, which is untouched by sin and illusion. A point of pure truth, a point or spark that belongs entirely to God, which is never at our disposal, from which God disposes of our lives, which is inaccessible to the fantasies of our own mind or the brutalities of our own will. This point of nothingness and of absolute poverty is the pure glory of God written in us. It is, so to speak, his name written in us as our poverty, as our indigence, as our dependence, as our sonship and daughtership. It is like a pure diamond blazing with invisible light of heaven. It is in everybody. And if we could see it, we would see these billions of points of light coming together in the face and blaze of a sun that would make all the darkness and cruelty of life vanish completely. And so maybe a spiritual practice could be this. So we took, don't show yet. So we took suggestions of names to name this building. So we got some suggestions. And then the membership voted on it. It was very controversial. Not everyone loved the name, which makes sense. Not everyone loved Space 12. We grew into it. It's like 100 people trying to name a baby. It's hard, okay? So the name of the space will be called Vesper, which means an evening prayer. And so this is the vision behind it. This is what I like about it. So historically, the church, they would practice the Vespers in the evening. So you're living this world of striving and doing and performing, and then you come in and you settle into this evening prayer that reminds you that you can do nothing to add value or love to your life. And you fall into yourself, and then you go to sleep. And I love this vision that this place can be that for our city. In a city that's growing so quickly of striving in Oracle and Apple and being more and cooler and doing that, there will be this space that's just quiet and gentle. And when you walk in, there's nothing you can do to add love or value to your life. Nothing. That your intrinsic value is already there. And I pray that this space will be that for our city. And so maybe when we see the sign, it can also be a spiritual practice for us as well. And may it remind us that there's nothing that can add to our intrinsic value. All right, let's keep going. So when they heard the king, they set out, this is the wise men, ahead of them, went the star that they had seen at its rising until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. Like there was so much joy, it was like flowing from them. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then, opening their treasure chest, they offered him, like, very reasonable gifts to give a newborn child, right? Gold, frankincense, and myrrh. This is exactly what children love. Let us take this metal that we have projected value on, right? This metal does not change. It's very valuable. Play with this, child. Lick it. Eat it. This is perfect for you. What's next? Frankincense. Ooh, a priestly scent, right? Just let's wave this smoke all over the child's face. They're going to love this. And also myrrh, because child, one day you will die. And when you die, we will embalm you in these spices. Happy birthday, right? It's like, it's just a weird gift. Like, think about it. It would be like us thinking, oh, there's a baby shower coming up. What should I bring? Maybe I would bring saffron. Saffron is very valuable. It's this flower. And why is saffron so valuable? I'm not sure, but children might like it. They could even eat it. They can put it in their rice and spice it. And then we'll give them, I don't know, patchouli. Because, baby, you smell fantastic right now. One day you will not. Here's some patchouli. And then we'll also bring you tiger balm. Because your bones and your ligaments will one day die. You'll rub it on it and be delicious, right? And I think the strangeness of this gift is only overshadowed by its symbolism, which is really beautiful. And you think about gold, maybe representing our dignity and our value. Frankincense, which represents our divinity, we're made in the image of the divine. And then death, which is the pattern of healing. We die our way to our dignity and our divinity. And I pray that this will be a space where we're all welcomed, anyone, no matter where you're from, no matter where you're at. But you're also welcomed at your own pace, whenever you're ready, to join us in this journey of healing, that we believe these small parts of us subtly, slowly can be healed. Parker Palmer says it like this: formation may be the best name for what happens in a circle of trust, because the word refers historically to soul work done in community. Here, formation flows from the belief that we are born with souls in perfect form. As time goes on, we subject to the powers of deformation from within as well as without, that twist us into shapes alien to the shape of the soul. But the soul never loses its original form and never stops calling us back to our birthright. And so when I was in Hong Kong, it was kind of a stressful thing to leave, especially during the renovations. But there was all that going on. And then I found out I was going to be in an Airbnb for 10 days with my family, like a small Airbnb for 10 days. I was like, whew, feels stressful, right? So I did some work, and I went in with two prayers going in. Two prayers. One of the prayers was, God, give me the grace to be in the space between impulse and action. I've talked about it here. So whatever the impulse is, just to notice it and sit with it first before I say anything or do anything. That was a prayer I had. And then Thomas Merton has this prayer to let those we love be perfectly themselves. I changed it in my brain to let those we love be utterly themselves, which I kind of like better. So that was the prayer. God, help me let those I love be utterly themselves. And so I figure I've been doing healing work, being spiritual directors, therapists for the last 3 or 4 years, setting boundaries, doing a lot of work. I was like, this could be a 10-day stress test. I can do this, right? So along the way, it was actually going pretty well. And then one day I was having a conversation with my dad, and he was in the middle of a 20-minute soliloquy. And so I was just, you know, listening to him and just to let my father who I love be utterly himself. Let my father who I love be utterly himself. So 20 minutes in. And then suddenly, I don't know where it took a turn, but he started talking about inerrancy. If you're not familiar with it, it's this new idea that the Bible is perfect. Like, there's no grammatical errors or, like, it's a perfect thing. So he said that, and then boom, impulse and action out the window. I jump in. I just start swimming. I was like, well, it's kind of a new idea. No one's ever seen an inerrant Bible. Actually, the denomination we're part of, they don't even believe in it. And then he looked at me, and he just smiled. He just paused. He just smiled. And it jarred me out of my whatever I was doing. And then I go, oh, that was my 16-year-old self. This isn't his first run with the 16-year-old Gideon. So he just smiled. And when he smiled, I was like, oh, I thought I was letting him who I love be utterly himself. He was letting me who he loves be utterly myself. And there was that moment where we gave it to each other. And it was this tiny, tiny glimpse of healing. It was a little bit of salvation. And Anne Lamott says it like this. Gratitude is seeing how someone changed your heart and quality of life and helped you become the good parts of the person you are. And I pray that this will be that space and this will be this community, that we will be filled with deep gratitude because collectively we helped each other change our heart and our quality of life. And we helped each other become the good parts of the persons we are. And so I'll close with a prayer. This is the prayer and the blessing we gave when we first blessed the space and we moved from space 12. And this is my prayer for us this morning. In out of the way places of the heart, where our thoughts never think to wander, this beginning has been quietly forming, waiting until we were ready to emerge. For a long time, it has watched our desire, feeling the emptiness growing inside of us, noticing how we willed ourselves on, still unable to leave what we had outgrown. It watched us play with the seduction of safety and the gray promises that sameness whispered, heard the waves of turmoil rise and relent, wondered, would we always live like this? Then the delight, when our courage kindled and out we stepped onto new ground, our eyes young again with energy and dream, a path of plenitude opening before us. Though our destination is not yet clear, we can trust the promise of this opening, unfurl ourselves into the grace of beginning that is at one with our life's desire. Awaken our spirit to adventure, hold nothing back, learn to find the ease and risk. Soon we will be home in a new rhythm, for our soul senses the world that awaits us. We pray this in the welcome of the Father, the intrinsic love of the Son, and the healing grace of the Holy Spirit. Amen.